I'm Dan Carell, CEO of the Digital Commerce Alliance, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if you like this podcast, come join us at a Digital Commerce Alliance event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. This week on Commerce Code, I'm talking with Ingrid Wilson at Olive. Olive builds digital commerce platforms for fintechs, and those platforms offer consumers fundraising, financial wellness, and membership and loyalty solutions. Ingrid is head of partnerships and client growth. Today, Ingrid and I are talking about the buy versus build decision fintechs are making as they create customer-facing capabilities, risks that change that buy versus build decision, and other factors like speed and cost, and the talent market, and the size of fintech in the global scheme of things. We talked about Las Vegas a little bit too, the parts that we could talk about. Stay tuned for a deep dive into the buy versus build decision in 2024, a conversation with Ingrid Wilson of Olive. This episode of Commerce Code is brought to you by Agio, a global leader in engagement platform technologies that create compelling experiences, foster people connections, and cultivate brand advocates worldwide. With more than 45 years of experience, Agio empowers Fortune 500 companies to deliver extraordinary brand experiences for employees, consumers, channel partners, subscribers, and members. Fueled by a holistic engagement ecosystem across workplace engagement, experiential, social activation, customer loyalty, and digital asset experiences, Agio's mission is inspiring people to achieve more, one interaction, transaction, and experience at a time. Agio. Engagement unleashed. Ingrid, welcome. Great to have you on Commerce Code. Where are you joining us from today?
I'm joining you from Toronto. Thanks for having me. I'm excited about our chat.
Terrific. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. You wrote a really interesting blog post coming out of the FinTech Meetup, and I will commend that to our listeners for starters. And kind of we wanted to just have you on the show to dig into some of those themes. Overall, you were talking about kind of the shift towards, you know, partnering for tech solutions, fintechs increasingly realizing that they kind of don't want to build everything themselves. Makes total sense. So I'll kick this off with kind of a multiple choice question here, and you can tell me what you think. So do you think this trend is driven by the risk of doing things yourself, the cost of doing things yourself, the opportunity to maybe get something better than what you could build yourself, or, you know, some other thing that I couldn't think of?
I think honestly, Dan, it is a combination of all those things. And then just generally, you know, companies getting a little bit overwhelmed at the idea of taking this big thing on themselves, you know, in terms of card-linked offers. People get a little uncomfortable when they have to step outside the core of their day-to-day business and what they do on a daily basis. And there's so much pressure today for companies to deliver not just a decent customer experience, but an extraordinary customer experience. And so, you know, for them to do that without the expertise, I think it just really becomes overwhelming for them.
I suppose when businesses are making decisions like this, just on the ground, my kind of multiple choice questions were a little bit like what a consultant would say. Well, it's risk and it's cost and it's quality and, you know, whatever else. I wonder maybe in the voice of the fintech, the reasons that people sort of tend to offer when they're talking about what they want to buy or maybe why they want to buy. So, you know, do you hear, you know, kind of a top three or a most common explanation of why they want to go this route?
Yeah, I would say the first one really is simplicity and flexibility. So again, people wanting to stay to the core of the business that they're running and not kind of step out of their lane into something that's not comfortable for them and focus more on the day-to-day. But just the idea in our world that we offer both a full integration solution if people are interested in that, or we offer a super turnkey hosted solution that's off the shelf that people can get to market quickly. You know, because I think when you look at the roadmap of taking something like this and bringing it to life, if you were to do it yourself, you're talking the difference between months and potentially years. So I think that and the other larger, I mean, it's tough to say in which order these would go in because they're all equally important, but compliance, you know, and data privacy, you know, I think, you know, we hear a lot about, the importance of that. And at all of, we take care of every aspect from submitting to the networks on the program's behalf and making sure that the individual and cardholder data is safe. We don't store any of this data. We tokenize it and vault it. So it, you know, we're completely PCI compliant and there's nothing that people have to worry about on that. And we deal with all of the compliance that comes with working with the networks. And I think this one is, you know, equally important, the cost of doing something like this yourself. I mean, you have the cost of, you know, not only the infrastructure, the tech, but the staffing. So in order to bring the right expertise onto your team to build something like this, it's going to cost a lot of money. And, you know, I think often the timeline that it takes to do something like this, people underestimate it, and it can take, you know, an enormous amount of capital to take this from what we can do in months to carry that over years in terms of sometimes what this takes when people build it themselves. So I would say those are the main reasons that we see people coming to us to help them from a partnership standpoint.
It sounds like a kind of typical story, I guess, of specialization over time. One thing is that you have players like your company and other providers that just become specialists in different areas. And so it makes, you know, they develop an advantage. You know, part of it is just the world gets more complex, right? The competitive standard for what you have to be able to deliver. And I think at DCA, we just hear that all the time, right? Like, what are the capabilities that have become normal in the marketplace? And it just gets more and more difficult to piece that, you know, that together on your own, right? And that's, you know, it's just, you can think of examples of all kinds, right? Car companies used to largely make the stuff themselves, and now they assemble cars out of sub-assemblies because the sub-assemblies are so complex. You know, it's the way that industries go. You know, having said all of that, I'll tell you that, you know, in software sector and having worked in various parts of it, you know, you often end up in a situation where a third or maybe half of players in the long run, and you ask them, hey, what's your system for this or that? And it's some Frankenstein thing that they built years ago and they haven't managed to replace yet because it was in-house, you know? So I wonder, you know, when you see companies that sort of go, you know, they look at the buy versus build thing, or maybe they looked at it years ago and they're still on the, we built it internally. What's the mistake that you kind of see companies making when they do sort of choose to go it alone?
Well, I think a major mistake they make is underestimating how long it's going to take. You know, I think some people think that this is a simple process and they don't understand how many players are in the ecosystem that they need to manage to bring a solution like this to life. And so we can bring something to market in months versus years. And, you know, I think that people, they underestimate that this cost is something that is way beyond what they budgeted for. And it's difficult to find the talent out there that has the expertise. I mean, I think the beauty of working with someone like Olive, we have the expertise. I mean, at the core of what we do, we're a bunch of entrepreneurs that have specialized in customer engagement throughout our whole career, right? And so you're getting not just best-in-class technology, but you're getting experts that, you know, are going to provide consultative advice the entire way along the sales process and into the delivery. You know, we don't just sell you the solution and walk away. We have a very strong customer success team that is really in business to make sure that your business is as successful as our business is. So I think that's another mistake that they make. They might pick a partner that doesn't really have that same approach, that it's just more of a turnkey. Here's the solution and you figure it out yourself. You know, we're in this with you. We really do look at it as a partnership, and we're very selective about the partners that we take on because we want to make sure that we can be successful in what we take on as a business and that we really believe in the program that we're supporting.
I'm kind of imagining what you've been saying. It seems like one answer on what mistakes people make on things, especially if they're going to go it alone, is just not being able to know, because it's not, sometimes you don't have the experience to know, you know, what is going to go wrong, right? Like, so you say, well, we're going to do this on our own. And there's sort of an aspect of the less you know about something, the simpler it seems, right? Until you get into it and then you know, then you kind of find out. You mentioned talent, actually, and I wanted to pause on that one. I mean, it's got to be the case that there's a limited universe of, you know, there's been talent short, labor, you know, market tightness in the last, you know, for years now. And I think that's not going to go away is the sense. And, you know, within the CLO space, within just the fintech space, there's a pretty limited universe of folks who, you know, who have experience in these things. And so that's got to be an area where companies just bump up against the, well, we're just having a hard time getting the people that can even do it.
Oh, 100%. And it's so competitive, Dan. So, you know, they might get someone and then as they're working on the offer, the individual gets a better offer and jumps ship. It's, you know, I think it's a really hot market. And, you know, fintech is relatively young, right? And so there's not a lot of people out there with that right experience. And, you know, for us, we love a background where there is not just the tech background, but also the loyalty and engagement piece of it that, you know, brings it all to life. So it's a tough combination to get that kind of experience.
I had a conversation with a lawyer at a very large global law firm recently who worked with a lot of fintechs, and it had become kind of his practice. And it was funny because I was reminded, you know, he said, well, because this is the kind of firm that has about 1,000 lawyers. And he said, look, you know, there's one or two people at our firm that do fintech because, you know, fintech's a pretty tiny part of the marketplace. And, you know, I live in that world. And so I thought, gosh, that's an interesting reminder that in the scheme of things, when you look at financial services, you think about Toronto, London, Manhattan, Hong Kong, like, you know, the bulk of it, you know, fintech isn't the central thing that it is to us who are in digital commerce, where we just think of it every day. So you're right, right? Like there's a limited universe of talent and people who really know how to do this stuff, which is part of the challenge.
Yeah, and I think the other piece of it is it's such a fast-moving industry in terms of the regulations and compliance that you need to be on top of. And, you know, I think you need to have people who are committed to kind of self-educating themselves about that, because it's not something that, you know, you're necessarily learning on the job. You have to be curious, you know, and take on some of that education yourself in your spare time, and just sort of have that curious mindset that you're listening to podcasts, you're reading articles, and you're aware of sort of emerging trends in the industry.
Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 8 of the top 10 banks and over 3,400 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com.
You know, Ingrid, we've talked about some of the benefits of partnerships that are obvious, but I wonder, from your perspective, what are some of the kind of non-obvious benefits in a partnership like the kinds that you guys develop at Olive?
I'd say peace of mind. You know, I mean, we always talk about what keeps you up at night. I think this allows the decision maker on the other side to sleep better because they know that they're working with someone that's a trusted advisor. And we've been there, you know, not only are we building the solution for them, but we're building the solution for someone that's ahead of them in the journey. So we know what they're going to need before they even know they need it. So I think that's a definite advantage. There's so many advantages of it, like just the simplicity, the fact that, you know, we take something that can be so complex and make it easy. We often joke around that we push the easy button for you. And it really is like that.
You know, I wonder what your perspective is on the different areas you work in, and there's different industry verticals and the things that the customer is doing with the product. And what trends, you know, do you see? Are there areas that are hot right now? Are there areas that are particularly challenging?
I would say the major trends that we see in terms of companies coming to us, it would be three primary areas. So we do a lot in the whole financial wellness space. So I think that whole aspect of, you know, everything is so expensive, Dan, like from groceries to everyday things that we do. I think everybody's looking to save wherever they can. And so giving them the tools that they can do this in a sort of habitual way, it has been really key. So we're doing a lot with robo-advisors such as Questrade and a lot of up-and-coming fintechs who are strictly focused on financial wellness. So we found even at fintech meetup, I would say half the companies I spoke to were in that space. Charitable giving also seems to be an enormous trend that we continue to see, where companies, whether it's a charity themselves, such as World Vision, a large one that we're in the midst of launching, or other ones that are, maybe it's a major corporation with a small charity that they support that's not their core business, but a major part of the business that they want to support, but it's not their everyday job to do that. So they would look to us to help them with a creative solution to deliver, you know, more value to their customers and members in a more efficient way. I would say full stack loyalty programs are another vertical that come to us because they do so many things in their business they want to focus on the core of what they do. And card linking is something that they get a request for from a lot of banks and other smaller companies and membership-based organizations. So they'll partner with us to take on that small piece of their business.
Yeah, it's again more, it seems like more kind of the story of specialized knowledge. And, you know, so for example, on the charitable front, people that are have the thought, the idea that, hey, let's do this, don't know what they don't know, right? About like how, what's different about that? You know, what's maybe either technically or there's a compliance thing or there's a legal thing or it's a tax thing or whatever, but doing the operationalizing that strategy of allowing your customers to do charitable things through their financial tools. Yeah. It's just like anything. It's you don't know what you don't know. It's presumably got some elements that you guys are quite familiar with that the typical person in fintech hasn't seen before.
Yeah, and it's something you don't think about. And, you know, I think that's the nice piece of it. People struggle with saving, and this is as easy as swipe your Visa or MasterCard at Starbucks in the morning and, you know, round your card up to the next dollar, and it's going into a pool of savings that you could be putting towards your 401k or just to save for something like a vacation or something that you've been aspiring to, you know, to do to your home. And it just sort of forces that daily habitual behavior of saving, which I think we all need a little help with.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned pressing the easy button before for, you know, for companies be able to press the easy button to get these things done. And I was also thinking, as you mentioned, the financial wellness piece for consumers, people do what's easy. And so, you know, you're kind of doing the same thing there, right, is working with companies that are trying to press the easy button for consumers on financial wellness. Last kind of question here, and I want to talk a little bit about risks. I mean, there are challenges with every partnership, you know, in the tech world, things are complicated, right? We're trying to, so to speak, connect a lot of wires and make it work. And so as we sit here in 2024, what do you think of as kind of the key risks? And do you feel like they've changed, you know, in recent years?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I would say the biggest one, and I think everybody's aware of this, is just the data breaches and the risks that nobody was really talking about that 5 years ago. But scammers are getting smarter. Even companies that have enabled two-factor authentication are getting scammed. It's a real threat out there. And so, you know, for us, it's not really a risk because you're going to have to get through three different systems to get to our tokenized data. So it's not something, knock on wood, that we've had a, you know, an issue with, Dan, but it's something that we don't deal directly with taking people's banking details. So I think it keeps our risk down as well. We have direct feeds from both Visa and MasterCard. So we rely on real-time data to, you know, to validate all of our transactions. But when there's banking details involved, it can get a little more risky. I think also just, you know, as I mentioned before, the speed at which things are moving, sometimes it makes it difficult to stay on top of all the regulatory things in the environment that everybody needs to be aware of to stay compliant. So again, that's something that we pride ourselves on as taking compliance to a completely different level. I think also some of the other risks that are not so obvious are just the financial implications of not really exploring your partnership to the depths that you need to in terms of establishing the right cost structures and revenue sharing agreements and financial partnership that really is sustainable over the long term. So for example, you know, in our world, if we had someone that came to us and gave us a projection that they were going to have 1 million cards and we did a pro forma based on 1 million cards being enrolled and built their financial model to that, and, you know, we could have them in a situation where they're paying way more than they need to versus using some of the analytics that we have on our end where we know if they think they're going to have 1 million customers, what does that look like in terms of people taking the next step to enroll their card in a program? So we take a pretty rigorous approach with our partners in terms of trying to establish the right financial agreement that is going to be sustainable for the long term. Because we're not looking for partners to be here for the year. We're looking for long-term partners that we're still going to be working with in 5 to 10 years. I think the other risk that people have to think about too is just the whole dependency risk. If you're relying on another partner for a critical part of your business, you have to do your due diligence and make sure that the service levels are where they need to be so that that partner is taking your business as seriously as they take their own business.
That certainly correlates with, have they been in the space for a while and are they committed to that space, right? Is this what they do or is this something that they're trying? Yeah, you know, I guess all of this is, in a sense, a reflection of just the increasing sophistication or specialization within as fintech matures, even down to the scammers. You know, it used to be, we used to live in a world where you'd get an email from a Nigerian prince And I mean, of course, the first time, naturally, I helped him transfer $1 million into American funds. But after that, I knew, you know, that it wasn't really a Nigerian prince. But I think they all like went and got a master's or something. They're much better at what they do. So, but that's a good, you know, I mean, like everybody within an ecosystem becomes more experienced and more sophisticated over time. And there you are. I mean, that's part of the nature of the risk as it evolves.
Yeah, no, it's a huge problem. And, you know, just even consumers needing to be educated. I mean, in the past 24 hours, I've been, you know, I've had calls asking for my social insurance number because this got breached. And, you know, people, if they're vulnerable, they're going to give data that they really shouldn't be giving. So,
yeah, and as well, right. And for those of us who have elderly relatives, we know that there's, you know, that's a thing. So, well, look, Ingrid, I'm gonna thank you. This has just been a terrific conversation, really interesting, and it's been good to just do the deep dive on it and really learn from you and from your experience there at Olive. I'm grateful to have you on Commerce Code. Look forward to maybe I'll run across you in some gigantic hallway in Las Vegas sometime at a conference, or perhaps, of course, we'll see you at DCA events. Tend to be much more intimate than that, and so maybe we'll see you at one of those as well. In fact, surely this summer in Toronto. So thanks for joining us, and yeah, look forward to having you maybe on a future episode of the podcast Commerce Code.
Thanks again for having me, Dan.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com. Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week.